Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
As ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And, of course, we're also available live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie. I'm glad to say that the website is back up and running and looking very spruce and fresh.
Yeah.
Very impressed with it myself. Except for some mug shots. But other than that.
Yeah. We're the two handsome chappies.
Yes. You see two handsome chappies. That's us. Yeah, indeed. Yes. Moving swiftly on, and we're also available, of course, as a podcast, and you can catch us, as I say, live on the internet, dublincityfm.ie, and the newly vamped website, and I think there, and also as a podcast, and you can go back and listen to the previous program anyway. I'm not sure how far back they're going to go with them. Maybe it's just going to be the last week's or the previous program. Not sure about that. We'll find out. But anyway, let's get on with the show, John, and what to see in the sky this coming week.
Okay, now, unfortunately, the ISS went out of vision in the evening skies last week and won't be back until September the 10th. Until September the 29th, which is, that's going to be a milestone away, isn't it, really? Gee, there you go. So, we'll let you know a little bit more when that time comes around.
That's when it's back in evening skies, I take it. Mm-hmm. It'll be back in morning skies before then, but
yeah, I'll be
I'll
be out watching the morning jobs.
Actually, do you ever sleep at all?
No, I don't.
All right.
No. Now, Mercury, I went out the other night, actually, Ben, and I looked up and I said, where is everything? They were there months ago, and now they're all gone. So Mercury is unfortunately out of sight. Yeah, all planets, yeah. You look up and you sort of nearly get lost to see, because you could follow everything. They were all lined up against each other at one stage about 6 months ago. So unfortunately, Mercury is out of sight just at the moment. It's in conjunction with the Sun. Venus, on the other hand, a fine sight in the morning, about half an hour just before the first glimmer of dawn. So you don't get to see it for that long. And it's going to continue for the rest of the summer, roughly like this. So Venus climbs higher until the dawn sky finally grows too bright, and this is when it disappears. And in a telescope, Venus's shrinking globe is small and gibbous, now 14 arc seconds wide from pole to pole and 74% sunlit, which is good. It's showing at a magnitude of -4.0, which is pretty bright, and it's still a nice sight to see. Mars, 1.6 on the brightness scale, as we call it, border of Leo and Virgo at the moment. It can still be spotted very low due west as twilight fades toward dark. Now, I'm often asked where all the planets are in the sky. Now, the easiest way, I suppose, if they are in good view, is to follow the ecliptic, which is the path of the sun. And within a few degrees or two, they all are up or down from the ecliptic, and they follow the same sort of path every single time that they go across. So if you point yourself south, look up and get a good view. And well, the moon is the other thing to look at as well, and the way it passes through the sky. And that's where you get your planets following, either just in front or just behind. And it's good. And that, it's a big question, and I'm often asked on that particular subject. So I hope that clears that up for people. Magnitude 1, -1.9, Jupiter rises soon before the beginning of dawn. And you can find it now just at the lower left of Venus. So again, if you're up in the middle of the night, you're not going to see these guys. And Venus and Jupiter are about 9 degrees apart at the moment on August the 2nd, which is not that far away. It's only a few days away now. and they're heading for a close conjunction, just 0.9 degrees apart on August the 12th. So we'll just remind you of that next week, just to get that into the diary. Saturn, plus 0.8 in Pisces, rises around 10 or 11pm. This is really the only one you can see at the moment. And it's at the other end of the scale when it's at night time. This time, well, it's sort of... Actually, there's the thing. The darkness is creeping in slowly.
Yes, we'll get to that in a moment.
I did notice that there a couple of nights ago, and I said, what time is this? It's only about 9.30 and it's starting to get dark. So back to Saturn again, 10 to 11pm, daylight saving time, of course, but best try to get a telescope on Saturn in the hour just before the beginning of dawn, where it's highest in the south. And whether you're a fan of seeing the ring's edge on, or whether you want to see a bit of an angle, though I must say I'm a bit of an angle type of a guy.
Wouldn't be, but I haven't seen them myself now, edge on. I believe it's just like a thin line.
It is,
Bit like a sharp pin going through the planet, it looks like, apparently.
And remarkably, the thing about Saturn is that the rings are crosswise by 250,000 kilometres, something like that, in different different rings, and up to 10 metres deep, that's it. Mm. You might get a fluctuation, of course, but mostly of ice globules and crystals and all that sort of stuff. So it's hard to believe that we're so far away from it. We see it edge on, and the rings are only 10 metres deep. That's 36 feet-ish, thereabouts, in my language, in your language, Ben. Uranus, 5.8, and Neptune, 7.9. They're quite hard to see. You need a good telescope to see those. And Uranus, in fact, rises about 1 a.m. as well up in the east before the beginning of dawn. And Neptune, still, whoever chose this, the telescopic star, I think that's great.
Well, it's a star, inverted commas.
Yeah, and...
That's because you don't see the disk, unless you have a very... very large telescope. It'll just appear as a point of light, just like a star.
Still worth a little a bash to see it. I haven't seen it yet. I have seen Uranus, all right.
Oh, yes. I've seen them all. Well, Mercury. Yes, I've seen that with the naked eye, and Uranus.
Mm.
And, of course, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. Yeah,
they're all there, but it's just at the wrong time for us.
Neptune I haven't seen. But I have... seeing Pluto, not with the naked eye, of course, but I was at some public event by the IAS, I believe it was, and the guy said, do you want to see Pluto? And he had a binocular telescope. It's like the biggest pair of binoculars you ever saw. It's basically like two big telescopes strapped together, and he had us go to then Pluto, and then comes up Pluto in the middle of the screen. I had to take him at his word, because it just looks like it was just looking at it, you wouldn't know it was a planet, because it just appeared like a point of light.
Call it a planet.
Well, it's not a planet. Which brings me back to Roger's objective, as you mentioned earlier about the ecliptic, which is the path the sun traces through the sky, and that most of the planets, or the planets as we know them, are always within a few degrees of that. But except, of course, maybe this is another reason why you can't call Pluto a planet, although I don't think it's the reason why it was demoted, but it is at an angle of 17 degrees to the ecliptic, so it can be as far apart as 17 degrees from the north or up or down, north or south of the ecliptic, which is nearly two fist widths at arm's length. But anyway, that's me, the Pluto basher. I know you're the Pluto defender.
I just love it. So there we go. That's about all there is to see in the morning. There's stuff to see in the sky all night when it gets dark. It's the nebulas, the Orion belt, all that sort of stuff. So there is a multitude of stuff to see up there.
Oh, there's no end. And an astronomical night, in fact, has returned to us now. More of that in a moment when I talk about the sun. But first of all, the moon. At the moment, we have a 25% waxing crescent moon. It is on view at the moment and will set tonight round about just before 11 p.m. and will rise at 12:30. Tomorrow afternoon, by that stage, it'll be a 31% phase. It will be due south just before 6 p.m. and will set tomorrow evening just after 11 p.m. when it'll be have increased its phase to 35%. That's so we're heading towards, you may gather from that, we're heading towards the first quarter moon on, that will be on Thursday, the 1st of August. Can you believe it already? And technically speaking, that's at 1:41 p.m. precisely, but not that makes a blind bit of difference to to most of us. Now, the sun rises tomorrow, Wednesday the 30th of July in Dublin at 5:38 a.m., which is 11 minutes later than a week ago. Local noon when the sun is at its highest and due south is at 1:31 p.m. And the sun sets, as you noticed, at 9:23 p.m., which is a whole 11 minutes earlier than it did a week ago. And just over 30 minutes earlier than it did at around about the solstice time. So after sunset, then we have civil twilight until just after 10 p.m. and then nautical twilight until just after 11 p.m. and nautical twilight. Then we go into astronomical twilight, which will go on till about 1 o'clock the following morning. And, or rather, that's when astronomical twilight will end at 1 o'clock the following morning. So we're going to have officially nighttime for a whole 1 hour and 11 minutes tomorrow night, astronomical night. And of course that'll get bigger and bigger as the weeks and the months go on, as we head towards, dare I say it, already the winter solstice. So that means we will have 22 minutes less daylight than a week ago, when we have another 3 minutes and 18 seconds less daylight than today, when there will be 15 hours and 45 minutes between sunrise and sunset.
Now, just going back a couple of weeks now, and I didn't read too much about this, but there was a 25 kilogram or piece of Mars which was auctioned off at Sotheby's in New York, and it was listed for a price of $2 million, which is about 1.7 million euro, and its top was 4 million, which is 3.42 million euro. Why so expensive? Well, it's not just any rock. It's the largest piece of Mars ever found here on Earth. It was found in Agadez region of Niger in November 2023. It's a reddish-brown hunk, which sort of symbolizes the color of Mars, and it's about 70% larger than the next largest piece of Mars found on Earth. Now, it did go to auction, it was sold, and it got to $5.2 million. Which is a little
bit. You bought it?
No, I'd like to see it though. Yeah. Just have a. You've had your hands on meteorites and things.
I have.
Yeah, there you go. From that, and, They're quite interesting, I would imagine, but this was, I presume that this came from Mars, just floated around for millions of years and just happened to land in Niger.
I'm sure they must be sure that it's from Mars, and I believe the way you can tell that it's from Mars and not from any other planet or from the asteroid belt is that there are little pockets of gas in them. So you analyze the gas, and it has the same. If it has the same composition as the Martian atmosphere, you can be quite confidently sure that it did originate on Mars.
Yeah. Well, I suppose they have the ways, and it is proof, I suppose, as well. But where does the money go to, I wonder? Is it the state or something?
It depends who owns it. That's a good question now.
If you find it, is it yours, or do you have to hand it to the state?
I think that depends on what country the local or your national, what your national laws say. I think in Ireland, I could be wrong. I think it belongs to the state. Just like if you find a treasure from Viking times or something like that, but you normally get some type of compensation
reward or
something.
Reward. Yeah. News now on the SpaceX Crew 11. They have arrived into quarantine, and they did a few days ago in Florida ahead of the launch to the space station. They are ready now for the July 31st liftoff. We have Zena Cardman, Mike Finke, Kimia, Yui, and Oleg and Platonov, and they say they are definitely ready for the July the 31st liftoff. Hopefully, everything will go right there, and they get up into space and dock where they're supposed to dock, and at the right time and everything. Great photographs of the getting off the airplane and going into quarantine. So, at the moment, systems are go for launch preparations to proceed after concluding a flight readiness review. So, and they look forward to launching soon, says Finky. There you go.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with Ben Emmett and my colleague here, John Dixon. And you can text and WhatsApp us on 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. Or email us astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And catch us live on the internet on the lovely new revamped dublincityfm.ie website. Now, speaking of NASA, John, cutbacks there, I see. Mm-hmm. Part of the federal, in the USA, part of the cutbacks on the federal workforce. And NASA apparently is going to lose about nearly 4,000 employees under Mr. Trump's effort to trim the federal workforce. And at the same time, of course, he wants to prioritize missions to Mars and also back to the moon. The NASA issued an email to around most of their employees, and they said around 3,000 employees took part in a second round of its deferred resignation program, which closed, I think it was last week. And they say combined with the 870 who joined the first round of and regular staff departures, the agency's civil servant workforce is set to drop from more than 18,000 before Mr. Trump took office back in January to roughly 14,000, which is about a 20% decrease, and that those leaving NASA on the deferred resignation program will be placed on administrative leave until an agreed departure date. And at the same time, John, NASA are saying that, oh, well, you know, safety remains our top priority and we have to balance the needs of, the finances and their need to streamline things and to make it a more efficient organization and at the same time fully pursue their plans of returning to the moon and to Mars. And probably remember that earlier this year, Mr. Trump's administration proposed a NASA budget, put a return to the moon and a journey to Mars basically as the priorities to the detriment or expense of slashing of the other science and climate programs. Of course, he's not mad keen on climate programs, drill baby drill and all that. Yeah. But they say that they want to beat China back to the moon and to be the first nation to put humans on Mars. And as you probably know too, that China, they're aiming for a crewed landing on the moon by the year 2030. While of course Artemis 3 is now planned for no earlier than sometime in 2027. That's had many delays, of course. And you may also recall another story we covered here some months ago about the administrator for NASA, that they currently have an acting administrator because Mr. Trump, he originally was, they were going to put Jared Isaacman. He was an astronaut on the private mission, wasn't he, to SpaceX?
He did, yeah. They went up for 3 days above the International Space Station, stuck their head out the hatch.
Had a look around
and went
moved
back
his arms and checked his spacesuit and
stayed for 3 days.
I think he was advised by or recommended by his friend Elon Musk, but Trump was going to go for him, but apparently now he changed his mind. And I believe rumor has it that's because he heard that Jared Isaacman had also donated to the Democratic Party, which didn't go down well with Mr. Trump.
Yeah, indeed. Now, SpaceX eventually got their 28 Starlink satellites into space on Saturday. They launched at 5:01 EDT, which is probably, you got to remember, was it forward or backwards with that? 5:01, it's forward, so 10 o'clock-ish.
Plus 5, yeah.
Yeah, so the Falcon 9 lifted off from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station, pad number 40. Now, what's interesting about this is the booster, about 8 minutes after liftoff, comes back down and touches down to the drone ship. And it's the 480th to date for SpaceX in Florida and California. And this year it was the 91st Falcon 9 launch. And at the moment there are 8,000 Starlink satellites in orbit. And this is according to astronomer Jonathan McDowell. And they reuse this so many times, it's absolutely brilliant. You know, it must save so much money. So there we are, another 28 Starlinks. Now, some of those will come back down eventually, but at the moment, 8,000 satellites, just the Starlink ones.
And more to come.
And more to come.
Indeed. And thanks to Helen in Cork for her text message. She's listening in Carrigaline with her granddaughter, who loves everything got to do with planets and such like. And just, don't we all?
Yes.
Were you a man keen on planets when you were a
kid? I was, and I could never associate from reading them in a book, I suppose, to actually placing them in the sky, and I couldn't get the reality of it, but mainly because it wasn't really drilled into us, and the interest wasn't there in those days, way back in the 60s and 70s.
But there's something, I don't remember doing anything in school, and it might be covered in the primary syllabus now, but I'm not really sure about that, but I don't remember anything in.
No, there's an awful lot more interest now, and I think it's great.
I think the kids are really up to speed, and they know Saturn, rather, with the rings when they see it, and their little mobiles and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Speaking of Mars, and you like this one, John, about Skyfall. Now, Skyfall has nothing got to do with your friend, James Bond. But it is a planned helicopter fleet which is going to be sent to Mars and essentially scout for possible landing sites. Now, of course, they learned a lot, I suppose, from the what was that little one they sent up to Mars, the helicopter? The Ingenuity. It was on Ingenuity, wasn't it? Program, which did more than it was planned to do. It covered over 14 times its expected flight target and 32 times its intended lifespan. But these are going to be little rotorcraft. They're going to operate independently. They're going to take high-resolution images of the surface with a view to looking for safe, resource-rich landing sites, which will have access to water, ice, and other key materials and items that people will need there. And there's going to be, I think there's about six of them, and they're going to operate autonomously, because of course there will be a big time delay trying to control from Earth. Even at its closest, there's a 20 minute time lag as the signals travel at the speed of light. But one of the other things, interesting things I suppose about it, is they're going to have the way they're going to land, which the usual type of drogue shoots, but they're going to use their own then motors to break the fall, and it's going to be done all autonomously as it scans the surface and adjusts its thrusters to land where they want to go, and then fly off in like little
robots, but they are of course little robots,
and they'll go off and take many pictures and lots of data and send it back via a probe in orbit around Mars, and send the images and all the information back to Earth, and that'll help them choose a site where to land when we eventually get there. Hopefully before I shuffle off my mortal coil.
Not this today.
A cheerful talk.
Not today.
Not today. Well, hopefully not today.
So, just contrary to popular belief, most of us would believe that the moon does not have an atmosphere at all, but it effectively does. It's known as a fragile exosphere. It's only probably about 5 centimeters deep, 5 centimeters deep there or thereabouts. Just holds the.
Well, that's where the thickest, most densest part would be within a few inches of the surface, but to all intents and purposes.
Yeah, and we've often asked the question, has Buzz's and Neil's footprints remained on the surface pristine? And, of course, you do get a little bit of erosion by solar wind, which is far less than expected. There's been a lunar rock study done on this. And the fragile exosphere, which is the sparse envelope of gas surrounding the lunar body, and it's mainly generated by interactions between the moon's surface and external forces. And until now, scientists believe that the solar wind played a major role in this particular process. But new research led by the Vienna University challenges the assumption, and seemingly there's very, very little erosion up there at all whatsoever from solar wind. Now, solar wind in its own way is I would imagine it's quite piercing because it has electrical this and electrical that and radio this and radio that. So it's going to strip, like it does, I suppose, the atmosphere from Earth here at about 400 tons per day. We're nothing really to worry about at the moment because the Earth is quite large and we have plenty left. But one day, like Mars, this will all disappear and get stripped off by the solar wind. So it's evidently not affecting the moon as much as we thought.
We're doomed.
No, we're not doomed yet. We're fine.
Thank you for that, John. Oh, yes. And speaking of all those little satellites up there from Mr. Musk, the Starlink, they have discovered, some university researchers, they've undertaken a big study on these low frequency satellite radio emissions, finding Starlink satellites are significantly interfering with radio astronomy observations, potentially impacting discovery and research. So apparently there are unintended signals from these little satellites, basically signals that are leaked from the onboard electronics, and they can drown out the very faint radio waves that astronomers use to study the universe, because these radio waves coming in from the far end of the universe are very, very, of course, naturally, you know, very, very weak when they reach us. But even a tiny little leak of electromagnetic radiation in the right wavelength or the wrong wavelength from one of these onboard satellites can drown it out. So you have to try to pick out the real signal from the noise that would be created by Starlink satellites. And as you mentioned, there's only going to be more Starlink satellites. So is radio astronomy doomed?
One of the doomed words at the moment. Yeah. Now, just before we go, Ben, Curiosity, that's the rover on the moon. Mars. And it's an area of boxwork, is what it's called. The campaign reaches new heights on Mount Sharp. So Curiosity has made significant progress in its ongoing exploration of the intricate boxwork terrain, which is quite an unusual terrain. It's very flat. And it made a climb of 11 metres to get to the top of Mount Sharp as well. So loads of experiments going on there. And they have all sorts of gadgets on board. It's the ChemCam Libs laser, along with the Mali and the APXS instruments, whatever they mean. To determine the composition and texture of the modular bedrock. Now, if you look at the photographs through the internet, it's remarkably flat going up the edge of that. So that's very lucky for Curiosity. It doesn't have the chance to hit any rocks on the way up, so we keep an eye on that just to see what it is. It must be getting some view from up there.
Thank you, John, for that. And that's all the time we have this evening. Don't forget, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And thanks again to Helen and Cork for her text, and her granddaughter Rory Daly listening from Carrigaline, and best wishes to them. Hope they're having nice weather like we are up here in Dublin. But that's all for me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. It's music all the way now until 2 a.m. because up next we have Dublin's Greatest Hits, and from 10 p.m. to midnight, Nigel Wood has his Ear to the Globe with his World Music Mix, and then from midnight until 2 a.m. Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul with a program called After Hours. But please join myself and John at the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week. We'll be back with all the latest news from all corners and dimensions of the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John. And all that is now.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.